This is Forrest Solis interviewing Melissa O'Connell on May 24th at 2:45 for the Creative Push Project. Okay, so Governor. Okay, so if you can take us back, like set it up.
Set us up.
You know, the relationship, the conception, all of it.
Okay. Bob and I got married in August of 2000 and... Oh, sorry. Bob and I got married in 1979. I was 25 and he was 30, and we had been involved with a Christian group at the time, and this is so complicated. We weren't planning to get married. We were planning to go to Paris together and do some Bible fellowships, and we fell in love. And there were supposed to be three of us going. Gosh, I don't know if I want to set this all up. It may just sound so corny. And
no, it's totally a great story.
Okay, so there were supposed to be three of us going, Nicole and Bob and me. And when we fell in love, which was really fast, we decided we better not tell anybody and get married the following year, because how weird would it be for Nicole if... I'm not sure how we thought we were going to keep this from her, but that we should just... play it really cool all year. Then about, it's hard, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks before we were supposed to leave, we got notification that Nicole was going to Switzerland and not Paris. So Bob asked me to marry him. And I said yes, and called Mom and Dad and told them I was getting married, and they'd never even heard of Bob. And they were terrified that they didn't understand why I was getting married. And although I tried to tell them that this was really my soulmate, this was the one. And so I went home for 2 weeks to visit my mom and dad and came back, and we got married in a very small wedding and took off for Paris. And we had our honeymoon there. Did not have work visas. I spoke fluent French, and I had a job coming back because I'd already been there before. I was, it was a new job. I was a bilingual secretary for an American who was writing reports for the transportation department. And Bob was doing house painting and handyman things because he was just learning French. His grandmother was French and was from France, so that was his inclination when this whole thing first started was, I want to go spend a year in France. You've already been there once. Can I come with you? Yeah, that sounds great. And let's keep it really platonic so that because we've got something we want to do. And that's probably why we fell in love so quickly, because we took down all the expectations that you have when you're male and female and we're just really close friends. And we were pretty much together 24/7 from then on. So
you got married after your trip to Paris?
No, right before. We got married, like, I think our engagement was 6 weeks, and we only kind of discovered we were in love maybe 2 weeks before that. So it was very, very, very quick, and we were very, very young and naive, and fortunately it did work out.
So why were you wanting to keep it platonic then?
Because we thought if we were going over there to with Nicole, the three of us, to do these Bible studies, then I think it was that we were already maybe a little attracted to each other. And Bob was the one who brought it up. He said, if we do this, let's just, you know, lay it out on the table now. We're only going to be friends. Nothing's going to happen. And I said, that's a great idea. And so...
And then she canceled that trip, and you were like, let's get married?
Well, it was before then that we realized, oh my gosh, we love each other. But we didn't want to make Nicole feel weird. We were going to be living together. So that's kind of why. And then it was, oh my gosh, this is back in 1979. Nicole's not going. I guess we better get married. Why not? So it's really embarrassing to realize how young we were, even at 25. But I didn't want to take birth control pills. We weren't planning to have children right away, maybe a couple of years. And especially because we were living in Paris. And so we were using some natural methods of birth control that obviously aren't very good. And we always said that one of the reasons the natural methods didn't work is because I got an electrocution in the bathtub from our cat. Right around the time we think I got pregnant, we think it maybe threw things off. The cat, we had a teeny, teeny bathroom and a little kitten, and this was Paris with, you know, the voltage is really high. And I was sitting in the bathtub, and Bob was brushing his teeth at the sink, and the hairdryer was resting on the sink, the edge of the sink, and it was plugged in. It was off, and the kitty reached up and pulled on the cord, and it's one of those things you see in slow motion happening, almost like in a cartoon. And the hairdryer landed in the bathtub, and the shock went right in through my hip and then out through my feet to the drain. It was pretty terrifying. And, you know, I guess I'm really lucky that I wasn't lying down in the bathtub. So anyway, that's what we figured was the, excuse me, the trigger where the natural birth control maybe wasn't working, because, you know, shortly after that, I told Bob I thought it was pregnant because I had this pain under my arm. So I remember we walked down to the English bookstore, and, you know, this is before the internet, and we're looking at books on pregnancy, and one of the first symptoms they said was pain under your arm. So we stopped at the pharmacy on the way home and bought a test kit, and I was pregnant. And we had been married, I think it was in January or February. So we'd gotten married in August.
What was your emotional state?
At first we were terrified. What were we going to do? We never considered any, you know, it's more like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're not settled financially. We're not even in our country anymore. And then it got kind of exciting. My sister was already a month pregnant. We'd just heard. And of course, and my poor parents, I swear, you know, I had to get married, and then I called them and told them I was going to have a baby. So we came home in August, and she was born in October. And, you know, so the whole time I was there, I was going to the American hospital to get checked every month. And I only weighed 112 when I got pregnant, and I think I weighed 138 when I had her. So I didn't gain very much weight at all. And when, so the due date was October 12th, and I was seeing the doctor back in the States, and because I was so small, I was very tight, and it was breech. She was breech. The baby was breech. And so she told me she didn't really have a problem doing a breech delivery. She'd done many. And she was having me doing all sorts of exercises to turn the baby. And I went in for a checkup one day, and she said, I think you're due, and we need to get an x-ray to find out what position the baby's in.
So I hate to ask you this, because I'm sure you said this, but are you still in France?
No, we came back in August. Okay. So I had a couple, she was due October 12th.
So when you came back, your mother saw you for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me a little bit more details like there, how the actual being pregnant was?
I had horrible headaches, and I was working. Actually, I was doing the secretarial work, two different secretarial jobs, one for this American, and then I'd take a subway ride and go to another part of Paris, and I was working for this French man who, had some kind of medical device, I don't even remember what it was, and I would translate his letters, his marketing letters into English. But It was other than getting headaches, it was a pretty fun pregnancy. You know, we really loved living in Paris. We lived near about 5 blocks from the Eiffel Tower. And, you know, I was in great shape because we walked everywhere. It took me, I think, a good 20 minutes to get to the metro to go to work, 20 minutes, you know, maybe 10 minutes to get to the job. Then I would do the same thing at lunchtime, and then I'd walk 20 minutes home. And Bob actually trained for the Paris Marathon while we were there. So he was running every day. And
nowadays, there's so much like control over our diets and like what we can have. Were you like, okay, well, I can't drink?
No, I didn't drink. I know we had wine occasionally. I think the worst thing is I remember going out to dinner with some French friends that we'd made, and they were probably a little bit older than we were. And, you know, when they dine, they take a long time and it's really late. And I would just always fall asleep. So, but no, I wasn't really concerned about drinking wine. I mean, that was the only thing I ever had, and I didn't ever have very much. And there were no rules. My sister sent me some American prenatal vitamins because she was probably more aware of these things than I was. I was pretty oblivious living over there and naive.
Did you have other friends there that were pregnant too?
No.
So you were like totally isolated.
Yeah. And you know, communicating with family back home, even in 1979, we wrote letters and we only called for important news like, hey, guess what, I'm pregnant. we were pretty much just had each other and, yeah.
Did your sister have headaches too?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know.
Okay, so talk about the flight.
I don't remember. Oh, shoot. I do remember. When we came back to the States, we stayed for a few days with some friends in New York. And I had these horrific pains in my belly, in my stomach. And they were like on top. I think it might have been the placenta. You know, everything was so, people didn't communicate. So we went to the hospital. And it was like that. I think it's Bellevue Hospital in New York, which is like where all the poor people go. And I think we classified as poor people then. We only had like a major, we didn't have any insurance in France, not even travel insurance. Didn't even think of it. And when we got back to the States, we got a major medical policy. So they said I was fine. And I went home and the pains kind of went away and that was that. I still have no idea what it was. But, you know, it was pretty easy pregnancy other than that time in New York.
So so then you went to New York and then you went to where your family was and, you know.
No, actually we were in Illinois. that in itself is kind of a long story, but the gynecologist obstetrician was kind of a family friend and she was going to deliver for us. And there were, you know, we were still involved with this Christian group. So we were doing some work there. So I didn't see my mom and dad I don't think I saw them until I had the baby. And then mom came out and stayed for 2 weeks.
That's nice.
Yeah. But yeah, isn't that weird? So she didn't see me pregnant that time. So I went to the doctors and it was, you know, like after my due date. So it was the 16th and I just thought I was going in for a checkup. And she said, I think you're ready to have this baby. I didn't think I was ready to have the baby, but we lived 30 minutes away from the doctor. So she said she wanted to do an x-ray to see what position the baby was in. And now I think she did an x-ray on me and the baby, but, they did. And she was, what they called a frog breech. So her legs were split and she was breached. She said, there's no way we can deliver her in that position. Let's do a C-section tonight. And I was pretty upset because, this is the 70s. And I'd been reading books like Grantley Dick Reed, who was one of the first, promoters of natural childbirth. And I really, really wanted to do it naturally. We did take some Lamaze classes when we got back to the States. And I was very excited about this experience. And I was very upset because I didn't feel like I was ready to have a baby. And by the time Bob got to the hospital and we got ready to do the C-section, I still didn't feel like I was ready to have a baby. And I felt like I was kind of getting robbed of some experience that I'd been psyching myself for 9 months. It was a hospital in southern Chicago, northern Indiana. And it was, Bob was the first, of course, they gave me a general anesthetic, which is amazing. My sister in California, who'd had a baby 6 weeks prior to me, she'd had a C-section too. She was awake, and they gave her a bikini cut for the incision. Well, the surgeon who did my C-section in another part of the country the same year gave me a vertical incision, gave me a general anesthetic. However, we did make history because Bob was the first father to have ever witnessed a cesarean in that hospital. So they let him watch, and and I don't know what happened because, you know, I was out.
So when you came to, were you in, like, recovery?
No, they did wake me up in the room. I did see, you know, they brought me the baby, and I held her for a few minutes, and then, you know, they whisked her away, and she was just this little teeny thing with a lot of dark hair and very, very cute.
What was her weight?
Her weight was 6 pounds, 13 ounces. So she was little, and I was, you know, I hadn't gained a lot of weight. Lauren was a lot bigger. And that also kind of was the trend as they got older. They were about 22 months apart, and people, by the time Lauren was 2 and Danielle almost 4, people used to say, are they twins? And even in high school when they looked so much different, every once in a while people would say, well, are you twins? No.
It's funny, you know, nowadays I feel like babies tend to be on the large side, uh-huh. You know, and it was more common to have smaller size babies, you know.
Yeah, my sister had 2 large babies, and Lauren was pretty large. Lauren was, she was almost 9 pounds. She was 8 pounds, 16 ounces, or 8 pounds, 13 ounces, something like that.
Yeah, it's a big gap.
Yeah, she was big.
Okay, so let's stick with the first story. So
Danielle.
Yes. So you, did you find when you, because you were given a general, that you were like weak muscled, or could you still have that bonding with Danielle?
I, you know, again, I felt so ripped off with that, but I will say, and people say this over and over again, you, before you have children, you focus so much on the experience of the birth. And, once you're a mother and you have the relationship, and I will say the older you get, that all kind of fades away, and you kind of like, it doesn't matter how she came. She was ours. And I was absolutely going to nurse this baby, and did. And she cried pretty much nonstop for the first 2 months. She was colicky. She didn't want to be, you know, again, this is a world without very much information. The only support I had was the little La Leche League book, and I did have someone I could call. But it didn't seem to be, I don't know if I was eating foods that she was allergic to. I don't know if I wasn't making enough milk, but pretty much I nursed her 24/7 whenever she wanted it. She slept with us because she would fall asleep in my arms, and the moment she'd be asleep and I'd put her down, and then she'd startle and wake up, and if I'd known about swaddling, or maybe it was just maybe she was too early. Who knows? You know, again, so little information back then. I don't know.
Did you take her to a pediatrician and were like,
oh yeah,
she's really fussy and
yeah. I can't remember. I do remember trying to stop eating certain foods, and pretty much, you know, it's so funny. I remember Mom was there and we were going to go to the fabric store because we were making a crib bumper and a skirt for the crib. And I come from a family of seamstresses. So we left Bob and Danielle together, and we had literally just, and this is the first time I'd been out of the house. So we got into the fabric store, and the woman looked up and she said, are you Melissa O'Connell? And I said, yes. And she said, and handed me the phone, and I picked up the phone, and all I could hear was this baby screaming. Bob said, I think you better come home. So we did. We went home. And I finally just kind of just said, okay, I'll do what I'll have to do. And I wasn't depressed. I didn't work, so I wasn't worried about that. I just took care of the baby. I nursed her when she wanted to nurse, and I held her. And since she wouldn't sleep on her own, she slept with us. Wasn't worried about rolling over on her. It was the most natural thing in the world. And suddenly, about the two-month mark, she started smiling and was happy, and she was fine as far as the crying. I did nurse her for a whole year. I can remember on her, like around 11 months, I tried starting to feed her foods, and she really didn't want it, wouldn't eat it. And on her first birthday, we offered her some cake, and she didn't want any of that either. So,
can you hear that? Are we okay? Okay, we're going to pause until that buzzing stops. Can you talk a little bit about maybe the difference between like feeling isolated in that in France and then coming home and having your mother and what that was? Or were you still feeling isolated? Did you have girlfriends?
I didn't feel isolated. It was just the way it was. I had Bob, and, you know, he really was and is. Sorry. He was always my best friend. I never felt alone. I never felt isolated. It's only in hindsight that you realize how much information I didn't have and how much maybe I was just doing it like people have been doing it forever, you know, without a lot of information. I thought I was very knowledgeable. I thought I was much more knowledgeable than my mother, and I'm sure I was because I was a reader. And I did have, and I think they're still at Danielle's house, those original books that I scoured. So, and I got those all in Paris, bought them there.
How was Bob throughout when finding out that you were going having the C-section? And was that hard on him to see you go through that? Or
I don't think so. It was just, you know, he was very understanding. He understood why I wanted to do it. But we didn't question the choice that the doctor made. But we did change things up a little bit when Lauren came. So
yeah, we can transition to Lauren's birth. Was that planned?
Yes, Lauren was planned. So when Danielle was about 13 months old, we said, you know, if we're going to, we have this family, let's have another one. And I was pretty much instantly pregnant. So they were 22 months apart. And that's when, because I got pregnant, then I had to wean Danielle. And I had asthma as a child. And so looking back and understanding what had happened when I was about 6 weeks old, I had some problems. And, I'm not sure if it was colic or what. And my mom started nursing me and put me on formula. And I got asthma very quickly. And as a small child, I was very allergic to a lot of different foods. And went through, I still have asthma. So because of this, and that's one of the reasons why I was insistent on nursing for at least a year and being as late as I possibly could to introduce them to solid foods, because I didn't want them to pick up that tendency. It worked with Danielle. It didn't work with Lauren.
So you found that you were pregnant?
Yes.
Was the pregnancy the same, or how was it different?
Well, I had a toddler. I had a baby. I wasn't getting as much exercise because we had a car. And I did have a lot of friends who were pregnant at the same time. Now, I was in a mommy's group. So that was really fun to be and my sister was trying to get pregnant. She didn't get pregnant at the same time, but we were still miles away anyway. So it was one of the choices I made. So a lot of the women I knew were doing natural childbirth. We were all nursing. It was a pretty popular thing to do back then. No one wanted to do cesareans or feed their babies formula. So I decided that I wanted to have a natural delivery with this second child. So I found from a friend of mine, a doctor who specialized in high-risk pregnancies, which I was since I had already had a section. And so I went to him, and he said, yep, I could do it. I got bigger with Lauren, but not that much bigger. Maybe 5 pounds more. So, you know, it was just, we were very conscientious, more conscientious of what we ate then, I think, than mothers are today. And I don't know if that made it easier for us, or she was still a big baby. So they had given me a due date of July 12th. And so, you know, it's funny, I don't remember a lot about being uncomfortable in the pregnancy or anything. I mean, it was just, I felt great. I always felt really good. So.
Yeah, Danielle had really good pregnancies too. It sounded mm-hmm. like you guys have, you know, a genetic gift or predisposition to making babies and growing them. Okay, so you were pregnant, you were planning on delivering natural. And were they monitoring the whole breech situation? Is that something that they were concerned about since the first one was breech? Or
I don't think they thought that that necessarily was going to happen again. I wasn't as small as I was with Danielle, and I wasn't as, you know, my body was a little loosened up, I think. So I never felt, she was never breech. At least, you know, I guess all babies are breech to begin with. She turned fine. You know, I was traveling. I was flying home. I flew home from the first time. I flew home from Paris when I was 7 months pregnant, you know. So I don't know what kind of stress that puts on the body. It could have. Who knows? But anyway, so they told me my due date was July 12th. But July 12th came and went, and they said, nope, you're not ready. And we waited and we waited and we waited. And I can remember Lauren's really specifically, because I finally got the experience. I'm not sure if it was what it was. So we had one car, and I, you know, of course you think you're getting contractions. I was finally starting, I'm really going to have a baby. I can feel these contractions. And I don't remember exactly what came up to it, but I said, I'm ready. I think we need to go to the hospital. So we drove Danielle over to the friends who were taking care of her. And then we drove the 20 minutes further to the hospital. This is where the hospital that they worked out of. And we got there, and I got in the hospital room. They examined me, and they said to me, they said, honey, you aren't even close. You're a long ways off. Go home. So I was very disappointed, and we went back and we picked up Danielle. We went home. Bob said, okay, I'm going to go do a bid. And I said, okay, I'm going to go to the grocery store with Danielle. And I was pushing her down the aisle, and she's, you know, 21, 22 months old. And all of a sudden I got this contraction that made me keel over the shopping cart. And we walked home, because this was just down the street from where we lived, and Bob had the car. And I didn't call Bob because we didn't have phones. I waited until he got home. And I said, okay, this is really it. I don't care what they said. We're going back. So by the time we dropped Danielle off at the babysitter's again, and I got back in the car, and my water broke. And I pretty much was a basket case all the way to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, they came out with a gurney and put me on it. And then I got out of the car and threw up everywhere. And I, you know, of course I said, oh, thank goodness. That means I'm almost there. I'm going to have this baby. And so, I mean, it was probably 8:30 or 9 at night. And she wasn't born until noon the next day. And I had also, because I insisted on natural childbirth, said I did not want any drugs. So the only drug I had was a local anesthetic to the cervix. It didn't do much. It was pretty intense. So yeah, there was no getting around it. I was going to have the baby this time. And but I wasn't, because it had started, you know, so quickly, I guess sometimes most women, over a process of a couple of weeks, their body gets ready for the baby, and mine just kind of had a jump start. So basically, I was just in that room by myself, and I've teased Bob still to this day because he just kept falling asleep. You know, and I'm sitting here doing everything I can to, you know, get through the pain and get through these contractions, and they'd come and check on you every once in a while. But, you know, basically, you're just parked in a room until you're needed. And
did you do your Lamaze and all of that?
Yeah, what I could remember, you know. Yeah, I didn't take refresher classes. I really don't remember.
Were you on your back the whole time, or were you walking around?
No, I wasn't walking around. I was pretty much on my back, which is so crazy. Again, I thought I'd read a lot, but there was a lot, I still didn't know, and no one was there to tell me. And, you know, my niece, Amber, is a doula, and she just moved back to town. And she was born, Amelia was born in September of the first three grandchildren, Danielle in October, and Amelia in February. So they're three are really close in age, those first three. But, you know, and I think, if only I'd had someone like Amber, wouldn't that have been great? Because, and no offense, Bob, but, you know, no matter how much they are your partner in all this, they really haven't a clue. You know, there's no way. You know, how can they understand what it's like or what you're going through or what you need, really? So, you know, it was a long night. It was very painful. I was pretty worn out. I didn't sleep much. And the pain, you know, if I could do it all over again, I would have had pain medication. So I'm not really great with pain. But at some point, I guess they're early in the morning, maybe around 10 o'clock, they said, you know, it looks like, you know, now's the time. And we went into another, you know, a delivery room, you know, basically an operating room or looked like one. And Bob is with me this time. And I just was having a hard time delivering her. She wasn't coming, and it was very excruciatingly painful, and I was exhausted. And finally, right around noon, so I'd been pushing for a couple of hours, the doctor said that her heart rate was dropping and they needed to get her out. And they gave me an extremely long episiotomy. They still needed forceps, and four people basically pushed on the top of my stomach and pushed her out. And when she came out, she was this great big, almost a 9-pound baby, but she had inhaled meconium. And the doctor, he leaned over that baby, and with his own mouth, he sucked that meconium and spit it out. Can you believe that? But other than that, her score was pretty high. Other than that, and they also gave her to me right away. But they weren't real big on that yet, as far as you know. So I didn't really see her until they brought her to me in my room. But at this time, they would allow her to stay in the room with me in a crib, in a little bassinet. But I was pretty beat up, and then something really odd happened, and that was that her blood sugar dropped to zero, and she convulsed. And so they gave her a shot of glucose, and they said, you know, it's probably just the stress and from the birth, and just keep nursing her, and we'll monitor her. And so they wanted to keep her in the nursery that night, and I remember this specifically because the pediatrician came in the next morning, and her blood sugar did drop again in the middle of the night. In the morning, he said that he had stayed with her all night, and then didn't tell me until got a bill about 2 weeks later that he charged me, this is in 1982, like $800 to watch my baby all night. I thought that was kind of funny. But the next morning, they said they were needed to transfer her to the neonatal center in Chicago. So they took her by ambulance to the neonatal center, and it was pretty weird and a surreal experience to go home and go to the empty house without a baby, with our daughter and no baby. And they wouldn't, you know, these are also the days where you didn't get to stay with your children in the hospital. So we had to, we'd just, you know, I was pumping breast milk and taking it into them. And of course, you know, here I was wanting just to do everything naturally. And she was in there for about 5 days. And in this NIC unit, there were these little teeny babies, you know, like as big as your hands. And then there's this great big healthy baby. And pretty much they monitored her. And then they did all these tests and they said, she had her adrenal gland was bruised, but she was fine. And they finally let her come home.
Were you, like, really stressed out about that? And was it...
Yes. Yeah. It was very traumatic. It was traumatic emotionally, again, because, you know, I wanted to have the baby with me. And I was afraid, you know, what was wrong with her. And we were also planning to move back to California. And we were already a month delayed because we thought she would be born. So my mom flew out again, and she came out. She was there before we brought Lauren home. And 2 weeks later, we moved to California. But Lauren was a really, you know, big baby, and she didn't have the prop. She slept well and, you know, nursed her successfully. So I guess the things I did really, I was able to successfully nurse both of them, which is actually, looking back, that was, if I had to say, could I have that perfect delivery or could I have had the experience of nursing my daughters, I got the one that I think was the most important.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. So one is...
Obviously, I've forgotten a lot of the...
No, I thought you were
lot of
great.
Stuff.
It's a great story. Okay, so if you could... like kind of think about summarizing your experience somehow, like with a word or a phrasing of words.
Both of them together?
Or separately. It's your call. I think they're interesting stories because they're like two sides of a coin, you know, the way that you've experienced them.
Yeah.
So I kind of see them as a bridge, you know, or being together.
You know, I was never one who thought about having children as a teenager. I babysat a couple times. Loved to play dolls when I was little, but still, it wasn't like I couldn't wait to get married and have children. That really, it wasn't, it just kind of happened to me. And, but I think that the experience of having both those children, it's just fulfilling. I honestly can't think of anything that I would rather be known for in this world than to have, you know, raise two citizens of the world who are, you know, intelligent, kind, loving, contributing, that they're, a positive influence on the world, which I think my daughters are. So if that's all I've ever done in my life, okay.
They're amazing. They're amazing women.
Not sure why that's emotional.
I can understand why. I mean, I like just going to the graduation ceremonies and I see kids graduate and I think, I can't imagine seeing my son up there. And I get a little emotional. He's four, you know? I can't even imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Something about seeing them become who they are and have them be good people. It's important.
Yeah.
Okay, and the funny thing is, the next question I was going to ask you is, what is it like now, you know, seeing them kind of go through these stages of life, right? Like Danielle having had these kids and Lauren in this new marriage and thinking about children. And, like, what is that experience for you?
I have always been one who rejoices with every year. I never was sad when they left home. They both, you know, I was kind of, when I was a little girl, I knew that I would go off to college when I graduated from high school. It was just an expectation. And my daughters did too. And I always kind of scratched my head with these mothers who are so sad to lose their children. And I never really felt that way. I was excited for them. And I was excited for me because, you know, a new era for me. And honestly, I have to say, you know, now they've, you know, they're in their 30s, and I still feel the same way. Life is a journey, and it just gets better. You know, great memories, interesting to think back on those birthing experiences. I was just a little girl. And, you know, all these experiences that we have, they just, you know, frame your the way you look at life. And, you know, I've been so fortunate to be married to Bob still and have such a great relationship. So my relationship with Lauren and Danielle has just gotten stronger and better. It was hard for me, you know, and I've been with Danielle for all the births. And it was funny because it was something I didn't have my mom with me. And of course, she wouldn't have been able to be with me anyway. I was lucky Bob could. But when Danielle had the first, I wasn't really part of the birth until she had to go to the hospital. And then we went. But with the other two, I was in the delivery room with her husband for both of the children. And what an honor. You know, it's kind of full circle. And, you know, to see Lauren so happy with Jay, I just... You know, I feel like they have something like what Bob and I have, which is something truly lasting. And I think she's a better woman because of Jay, and hopefully he's a better man because of Lauren. But
it must be really wonderful too when Danielle was telling her story that when she imagined having children, that she really wanted to have two girls that were about the same age gap between her and her sister because of that relationship she has with her sister. And I think that's really a testament to, like, your relationship with them, that she wants to recreate her childhood, basically. Yeah. You know? Yeah, and that says something.
Well, I had an older sister, but she was 3 years older, and we're very, very close now. But we weren't really close. You know, sometimes 3 years is a lot. And but my very close friend in high school, her sister was only 2 years older, and we even socialized together. So I kind of really definitely on purpose wanted them close like that. And I do. I see that with Quinn and Casey, too. I think that they'll have that same experience. It's nice to have siblings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there anything else that forgot to say that maybe you want to add?
You know, it's funny because I think of, you know, all these questions about the hospital and the room and the family present. It was so different back then. So different. And changes were just starting to come. Like, as I said, Michelle had that C-section with a scar that wouldn't show. I never wore a bikini again, which was kind of sad. That was always, you know... to be 25 years old and have a scar running up the middle of your stomach, you know, and to not be awake to experience it. And then how dumb to not even get some pain meds the second time. And, you know, it was an old hospital, and you're talking about everything was stark. There was nothing, no birthing rooms, no counseling, nothing. And I guess I'm just really fortunate because I didn't ever get depressed or didn't have any challenges with, you know, that part of getting through the pregnancy or afterwards. So just kind of count my blessings. All I had is a couple of good stories. I really can't think of anything else.
When you were talking about, was it Lauren that had the colic? No, it was Danielle.
Danielle.
I was thinking about when my son was a baby and he was crying constantly. And you're right, you just sort of had this attitude that's like, yeah, this is my new job.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is my job, and so I'm just going to do it and do it well. It's like no other option.
Yeah. The two TV shows I remember, and I've never been a TV watcher, but I probably watch more TV in the first 2 months of Danielle's life than I ever have in my life. But Tom Hanks was in a sitcom called Bosom Buddies, and I would watch that, and then Julia Child, and I still make a couple of the recipes that she did on the TV when I was nursing Danielle. Yeah, I just held that child. She turned out okay.
It worked. Clearly it worked. All right, anything else? All right, I think we're going to end there then.